This is Digital Communicators, the comms-focused show for the tech sector.
Welcome to Babel's Digital Communicators podcast. I'm Katie Finn, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Konstantin Vinogradov, a general partner at Runa Capital. Runa Capital is a venture capital firm that invests in early stage software startups, which publishes its Runa Open Source Startup Index, a quarterly report documenting the fastest growing open source startups. And I'm delighted to be joined by Konstantin today to talk specifically about the open source landscape. Hi, Konstantin.
Hi, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Great to have you on board. First of all, what are some of the trends you're seeing in the open source startup?
I think the open source world changed a lot recently. I think when we started investing in open source a long time ago in 2011, it was a weird thing to do and nobody really understood how it works, but now, especially how to make money out of open source. But now I think it's pretty established business category and there are several public companies like MongoDB or Elastic or Confluent, which are worth billions of dollars with stable business model, revenue streams, etc. And right now I think I see more and more startups choose open source way to do software business. It's interesting because in the past, most of them were about some middleware like databases or web servers or DevOps tools or any other kind of things which are not visible by usual users, only by developers or maybe system administrators. But right now, I see a new wave of startups which are doing, for example, open source alternatives to productivity tools like open source version of Notion or Calendly or Airtable, other kind of things. And it's fascinating because open source basically penetrates all segments of business life and probably consumer life as well somewhere in the future. So yeah, right now there are a lot of interesting things happening there.
100%. And during the pandemic, we obviously saw accelerated digital transformation and with it accelerated use of open source software. How do you think open source adoption and attitudes to open source have changed specifically in the last couple of years since the pandemic?
Pandemic affected a lot on software market in general and especially the held open source setting because pandemic probably make everybody working remote, but also it increased decentralization. So historically, centers of competence were concentrated in several cities where everything happens. For example, the software was always about Silicon Valley. Still, the most valuable companies are based on the West Coast of the United States, but it's changing. A lot of people left Silicon Valley for other cities. And basically, remote development and decentralized development became kind of normal thing to do. And that's why, basically, it was very helpful for open source, which was developed in a decentralized way a long time ago. This natural open source, because it's about diversity, it's about inclusion of different contributors from any part of the world, not only from the city where you have your office. That's why I think COVID helped a lot to open source. That was one factor. Another factor, which is not related to COVID, but probably happens the last years, is about digital sovereignty. And a lot of countries think about how to protect themselves, how to create kind of digital borders, how to not be dependent on other countries in terms of critical digital infrastructure. And from this perspective, open source also is very important because it could be used by anybody without significant problems and without significant dependency on other parties. It could be neutral, it could be deployed in private clouds, for example, in the European Union or in the United States or in China or in other countries, which think that it's important for them to do. And finally, I think the third thing which also happened recently, after pandemic, it was general venture capital market, not only venture, but just general financial markets. And companies started to think more about cash efficiency, about how to not to grow at any cost, but to create a profitable or at least break-even business. And from this perspective, investors also love open source because it's more capital efficient. $1 spent could produce way more software, good products, and they could build more and could have more efficient research and development on the one hand. On the other hand, it has more efficient sales marketing because of bottom-up community approach and because open source can be tried by any kind of user without arranging large pilots, etc. So I think now it's the best time to create open source software and what was not the case before pandemic. I think a lot of things happened during the last 2 years, and which boosted open source adoption.
That's really interesting. At Babel, we do a lot of work with clients in the open source space, and we track the media conversation very closely. And it seems while there is this very significant momentum, there's also a lot of challenges that are facing the open source movement at the moment. From a security standpoint, in the wake of the Log4j vulnerability, we're seeing governments on both sides of the Atlantic wake up to the risk posed by vulnerable open source components. We saw the Biden administration this month launch its national security strategy, cybersecurity strategy, which mandated that companies take responsibility for open source components and dependencies used in their products, while the UK government has also just announced a call for views on software resilience and security. And in parallel, we're seeing the debate around the sustainability of open source seemingly increase, particularly with the burden on maintainers coming into sharp focus. There was a quote earlier this month from Amanda Brock, the CEO of Open UK, who said, "For open source, either the community wins in the next 5 years or it loses and everything collapses." But firstly, Constantine, do you agree with that statement?
I partially agree, but I don't believe that it will be collapse of open source, because I think open source is decentralized, actually is way more resilient than any particular commercial company, which could be killed by regulators or out of business, etc. So at some point, open source, like, for example, like Bitcoin, it could, its adoption can be slowed down by different regulators, but it can be killed, basically, because it's not localized anywhere. This is a more kind of a cultural thing, more commercial thing in terms of legal structure, etc. So I have to be some obstacles on the way of open source development, and there are several issues, like you mentioned, like security issues, or for example, sustainability issues, but they, I think, can be solved. So for example, if you talk about security issues, well, all software products have vulnerabilities. Just open source vulnerabilities are more visible than others. But on the one hand, it's weakness, on the other hand, it's strength, because a lot of people could review open source and fix it before, but this vulnerability is used by some protesters or etc. And that's not the case for closed source, which we know about vulnerability only when it was used. That's the thing. So it's, from this perspective, I think security issues, I mean, they're inevitable, but they will be in there is proper process around review and maintenance of open source. The second thing of sustainability, it's really an issue, because there are even these famous memes about a random person in Nebraska, which maintains part of all modern digital infrastructure. I really love this thing, because it's basically, it's true, and we need to do something with this. I've been thinking a lot about how this problem can be solved. So, for example, some solar maintainers or authors of open source packages to be supported by the community in some sustainable way. And I doubt that. I think that the best way to do this is through open source endowment. It was surprising for me to know that there are no open source endowments. There are foundations, non-profit foundations like Linux Foundation or Mozilla or Apache or other kind of things which support open source, but they do it not in a sustainable way, because they are dependent on annual donations from its members. It mostly it's about large corporation. But open source, I think it's here to stay. I mean, it's a crucial part of modern tech infrastructure, like, for example, universities. And we all think that universities are important, and a lot of people think that open source is also very important. But for some reason, we support universities using endowments. There are large ones of Harvard or Cambridge or Oxford or MIT, but there are no endowments for open source. I think ridiculous. I think we should do something like this, and I have a lot of ideas. Basically, I would like to join such kind of a project if somebody decides to launch open source endowment, because I think this is the way how we could solve this sustainability issue. It's all the only way, because if we build software layers on top of other software layers, like happens with open source and infrastructure, then all security and sustainability issues, they are a compounding effect. And the only way to solve it in a sustainable way is to support it using compounding interest, not one of donations, because otherwise it's not sustainable.
That's a really interesting point. And from your perspective, are there any other major challenges that you think facing the open source ecosystem?
I think open source now gets a lot of attention from regulators, for example, the European Union. I don't think that regulation could kill open source, but it could slow down adoption in a specific region. So probably, you know, over-regulated open source in European Union will harm, first way to harm European Union, not open source, because then open source developers will focus on other markets where they not need to fill in a lot of checkboxes just to ship their software and interact with the local community in some reasonable way.
And you touched upon it earlier, but from your perspective, how will the current economic climate impact fundraising for open source companies in 2023?
On the one hand, open source startups experience the same problems as all other tech startups nowadays. So the markets are down, there are less capital available for startups, and investors prefer more cash efficient startups. But open source has the good answer to this, because it's more cost efficient, decentralized, so there are a lot of talents from different parts of the globe participating in open source development, especially from not very expensive places, not like Silicon Valley or London or say major cities. They could be people from India, people from Eastern Europe, people from other parts in the globe. So it's more capital efficient on the one hand. On the other hand, because the bottom-up approach is more scalable and it's easier to do marketing for open source. It's like for every dollar spent, or every dollar spent by investor, open source startup, an average open source startup can do way more than the typical closed source startup, especially from Silicon.
And your Arena Open Source Startup Index revealed that the US, the UK, Germany, and France are still most likely to secure VC funding. Why do you think that is?
I think there are several reasons. On the one hand, open source startups, which is funding, usually they do something quite complex. Say, we recently published a report about Ross Index 2022, and it highlighted several categories which are the most popular among startups. And they are security, privacy, different machine learning and search tools, or knowledge management tools. Those are categories which are not familiar to many VCs overall. It's quite hard to understand, for example, how neural network-based search works in general. And on the one hand, on the other hand, not a lot of investors outside of major startup hubs know how open source works and how to make money in open source. That's why intersection of these two expertise areas usually could be found only in major startup hubs, like London, for example, or Silicon Valley. But open source startups be grown anywhere and be built by people from different countries, but they end up getting funding from just a few major cities.
And for open source companies that are looking to fundraise, how can PR help them to appeal to prospective investors?
There are several interesting dimensions which could, where PR could help open source startups. On the one hand, it's kind of aggressive communication with the community, developer community, because in some perspective, GitHub is just yet rather social. It could be used for marketing, could be used for sales, could be used for more efficient research and development. PR could boost all these processes if there will be some appealing message for developers on this platform. So one thing is the PR and developer community. Another thing is about how open source could solve current challenges, country level or maybe on global level. So let's say for Europe, open source can be very helpful to deal with GDPR issues, law, the kind of things to which Europe would like to solve. So for example, the cost, they will things in their private clouds instead of your servers and still get access to good services. So that's one thing. Another thing is about some global initiatives. For example, it could be about open source for, say, climate change pilots or for any other kind of global challenge. Let's say it could be open source hardware, it could be promotion used for to solve any impact related problems which are now people are trying to solve. And this is a good thing to OPR, because usually a lot of open source problems already exist on the market. And people who would like to solve global problems, they don't know about them, and they continue spending money on things which are closer, which are less sustainable on the one hand and more expensive for them. So I think we've got to help both sides on the table in this case.
100%. And so what do you look for in potential portfolio companies, both within the open source space and beyond?
For us, we consider open source startups as part of our just B2B software category. It's just one of the ways to build software and to market this software. It's not the only way. Generally, we look for B2B software companies which solve massive and painful problems. And open source would help to solve specific kinds of problems which are probably solved by closed source competitors, but in way less quality. For example, there are interesting use cases where open source will do something which closed source cannot. And this is the area I'm particularly looking for, and this is kind of a startup I would like to find. For example, a lot of financial organizations have internal machine learning models, let's say for credit scoring assessment. They need to be monitored because there are solutions of the market like Datadog, for example, which could say that machine learning model works and doesn't work. But such organizations need more advanced monitoring, which will tell, for example, if there is data drift in these machine learning models, and they continue to work, but they are not good enough, right, and they need to be retrained to be somehow modified, and it can be done without good access to data. And these class of organizations are not comfortable with sharing this data outside the security perimeter. For example, it could be data of customers and them. And open source is the only way to do this. So it needs to be deployed in private cloud for financial organization. Then we'll get access to this customer data that help to monitor machine learning model and tell if something's wrong and something needs to be fixed. So this is an example of the company we founded recently. We haven't announced yet, but this is a real example. Another example is our portfolio company, OpenRetouch, provides open source session repository software. Basically allows to store what users do on your website, in your private cloud, instead of sticking to some sites. Usually when people use their competitors, let's say Fullstone, which is quite large closed source company from the United States, session replay has data volume-based pricing. It means that if you have a lot of users on your website, let's say 1 million, it becomes prohibitively expensive for you to send data. And that's why usually organizations store maybe 5% of their user session, which means like 19 out of 20 bugs are not covered by session replays. And this is the thing which Open Replay helps to solve. So if you store everything in your private cloud, then we cover 100% of your bugs with the replays.
It's been lovely to speak with you today, Konstantin. Thanks so much for your time, and thank you for everyone else listening in.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
For more information about Babel and other episodes of this podcast, head to www.babelpr.com/podcasts.